Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Oi. I'm giving away nude pics of me. Stick around till the end of this episode to see how you can get your hands on them.
Hello and welcome to a special LGBT History Month episode. If I'd organised this properly, this would have been one of the main ones. Or maybe I'd have just started the season in time for LGBT History Month, but I didn't. What are you going to do? Well, what I'm going to do is an extra episode, a special bonus episode.
Bonus.
You're listening to Probably True. Please be aware that this podcast may contain strong language and adult themes. It would be boring without them.
Joining me, as you've probably guessed, shouting bonus at all the wrong moments, is my good friend Adam. Hello, Adam.
Hi. Bonus.
Stop it, because you just make me giggle the whole way through. Some of you may remember from a previous episode of Probably True, you talked about all sorts of kinky shit, didn't you?
It was a threesome that involved feet and friendship.
Yeah. Aww. Yay.
And all the Fs.
A heartwarming story for the ages. And also, Adam is one of the presenters on the Logbooks. Tell us about the Logbooks podcast.
The Logbooks is a podcast.
Okay, good. Yeah, with you so far.
We made a season last year, one season of about 10 episodes, and it's an attempt to tell a history of LGBTQ plus life in Britain from 1974 onwards, through the voices and the stories of people who rang Switchboard, the helpline, for help.
Right. So Switchboard is like gay Samaritans.
Exactly.
Right.
LGBTQ plus Samaritans. It's still running today as a charity, still taking calls, 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Has been doing since 1974. And the volunteers, when they started in 1974, started writing notes in these physical things called logbooks, just A4 notepads, describing what was coming up on the calls and also talking to each other between volunteers, like from one shift to the next, about what was coming up on the calls and how Switchboard volunteers manning the phones or personing the phones could actually help the callers.
I'm imagining them as kind of big, kind of leather-bound tomes.
They're not leather-bound tomes.
Oh,
they're like cheapo lined paper that you would get from WH Smith's.
Okay, so people would ring Switchboard with their kind of queries. Things, what, like, hello, I'm new to London. Where can I go and meet gay people?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, everything from, I just want to go to a disco because I'm new to London and I'm gay, or I think I'm gay, so I want to go to a gay disco. Everything from like jolly calls like that all the way through to my dad's just kicked me out because I'm gay and I've got nowhere to go. What do I do? Like right now. And oh, and by the way, the pips are coming. And so my money in the phone box is about to run out.
Of course, because no one had mobile phones, because this is like in the past.
This is in the past.
Oh,
LGBT
wow.
History Month.
That's true.
Yeah.
We are so lucky to live in the future.
We're so lucky to have mobile phones. So everything from like runaways like that to where should I go for a doctor? Because I think I've got the clap.
I was going to say, do you get people going, oh, there's something green and oozy's coming out of my knob. What should I do?
Where do I go? And so Switchboard kept notes on which were the good clinics, which were the friendly clinics.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And so they could advise callers, okay, don't go to this clinic, go to this other clinic because there's friendly doctors there who are like au fait with gay sex,
and not going to shame you for it and all that kind of
thing. Not going to shame you for it. There are calls about people saying, I'm a man and my wife has caught me dressing up in her clothes. She is really shocked about this and I don't know whether that means my marriage is ending. I don't know what that means about me and who I think I am. There's a lot of language in the logbooks, which is historic language. So there's talks of TS and TV, transsexual and transvestite, because in the early logbooks this is from the, you know, 70s and the 80s. So there's calls about that side of life. And there's also calls, lots and lots and lots of calls about sex.
Hooray!
Such as, what happens to the semen when it's inside you?
Just kind of sits there, doesn't it?
Yeah, until you poo it out. So calls like that, or I'm a girl and I've met another girl and we're going to do something, but I don't know what to do. How do I do it? What's she going to like? Things like that.
Do they get trained?
Yes.
Okay.
Switchwood had a training group. Well, it still has a training group. They get together and they share all this information. The point is, if you're a volunteer at Switchboard still today, then you don't know who's on the other end of the line when you pick up the phone. So you have to be able to know everything. So if you're gay man, you have to know about lesbian sex in case someone calls you and asks you about lesbian sex.
I suppose at least nowadays, if you needed to, you could put them on hold and Google it. But then surely they could Google it themselves.
They could Google it themselves. The point is they want to speak to another human being.
Right.
And Switchboard's tagline now is calm words when they're needed most.
Nice.
And so it's those words from another person.
Give me an example. If what was the typical thing that someone rang up and asked back in the olden days?
Okay, yeah, I can give you an example here.
Okay.
This is a logbook entry from April 19th, 1975.
Wow.
It says Chagaramas.
Same to you.
Which is the name of a pub or bar in central London, I think.
It's not there anymore.
It's not there anymore. Chagaramas reported not gay at all. Straights have been making comments when gays dance together. Gays have been huddled in a corner so they will feel ill at ease. So what's going on? That's the entry. So someone's obviously rung in to say Chagaramas, this pub which maybe is known to be gay or gay friendly, or maybe was recommended by a Switchboard volunteer on a previous call.
Yeah, so they, someone could have rung maybe up and gone, hey, where should I go? And they've gone, oh, Chagaramas is quite good.
Yeah.
And then they've rocked up.
And then they've had this experience of gays being huddled together in a corner. So the volunteer has written that down basically to alert other volunteers that they've had this report from someone that maybe it's not like gay friendly.
So it's a bit like an old worldy Yelp review or like a Google.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Exactly.
How did they share it and stuff? Like someone just stand up and go, guys, no one go to Chagaramas. Well,
that's one of the reasons why you have the logbook, so that when you start a shift, you flick back through the pages that represent the previous shifts so you can look at that. But then there was an information group of volunteers in Switchboard whose job it was to maintain an enormous like filing system
like filing cabinets and folders
cabinets, folders, paper, scrolls, Rolodexes like just loads and loads of paper, basically huge fire hazard. So they would have, you know, section on like bar, like gay bars in London. So it would be their job. They would look through the logbook, the most recent entries, look at things like that, and then go and update the entry that they have for, they probably have an entry for Chagaramas, and they'll update that entry to say, oh, we've had a report that maybe it's not gay friendly. And then when someone else rings and says, oh, you know, I've heard about Chagaramas, shall I go there? Is that gay friendly? Then the Switchboard volunteer can go, hang on a minute, you know, find all the papers.
One moment. Call it flick, 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 flick.
Yeah, exactly. And find the information and then say, well, you know, yeah, we did have reports that it was gay friendly. It's supposed to be a gay pub or something. But actually, no, we've just had reports that maybe it's not. So,
And it's certainly not anymore.
You make your choice, or it doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, that'll learn them. And so there must then be like the information thing, presumably now is online. Maybe not available publicly, but certainly more kind of like
digital.
One second.
Yeah, typey-typey rather than flicky-flicky. Exactly. Yes, Switchboard kind of moved its system of making these notes on calls and information files into a digital format fully in 2003. And so the handwritten logbooks run from 1974 to 2003. The first season of the logbooks podcast runs until 1982. And so we hope to make seasons 2 and 3, which will then follow on from that, bringing us up to 2003.
I see. And then will you stop?
And then we will stop.
Oh.
but actually, although it took until 2003 for them to go like fully computerized, there is an entry in the logbook in 1984, which reads something like this. I'll try and like orally replicate the typography that the person had used. Well, a handwritten typography. It goes November the 2nd, 1984. The arrival of the computer is imminent. The person's like drawn it, hand drawn it, like with like shadowing. It's like word art, proper word art,
wow.
But handwritten word art. And it says it's a 10 megabyte hard drive.
Massive.
And it's an apricot, which I don't know that.
It's the color scheme. It's just a nice kind of pinkish orange.
With like a mild fuzz.
Did you get people calling up and being like,
Hello, my knob's gone green.
Yes, Switchboard definitely did. You can see those in the logbooks, those kinds of calls. My knob's gone green. Can you recommend a clinic?
What should I do?
Like now.
Yeah.
What should I do?
It's dropped off.
yeah, so Switchboard obviously had calls like that, health calls. And so just like it kept like a Rolodex of bars, it kept a Rolodex of clinics to say, well, this clinic is friendly and this one is not. The thing about those kinds of calls is that you never really knew what was going to happen to that person afterwards. Because, you might give them advice on the phone and then, well, who knows whether they managed to get the treatment.
So, of course, because no one's going to call back and go, oh, it's all better now, thank you.
Exactly.
Can you tell me where I can go and get bummed against a tree?
Yeah.
Wow. I think that would drive me up the wall, just not knowing, like, all of these kind of glimpses into other people's lives with no kind of closure, no kind of happy ever after or otherwise.
Exactly. I mean, I can give you an example of that, actually.
Well, I don't... I mean, like, torture me some more. Go on, give it to me.
This is a logbook entry from June 11th, 1982.
That's almost 20 years ago.
No, it's... It's a lot more than that. I'm 35 and I was born in 84, and that's 2 years before that. So 37 years ago, or 38 years ago now, we're in 2020.
We live in the future, don't we?
We do live in the future.
So you can tell why I'm a writer and not a... I nearly said a number then. What do I mean? A mathematician?
Jesus.
Words don't work either anymore. Anyway, sorry. Okay. So we're going back to 1982?
Yeah, June 11th, 1982. Had a call from a 19-year-old TV. That would have meant transvestite, and that would be the word that the caller would have used for themselves.
Back in the day.
Who had just been thrown out of home this evening by his parents, who had just discovered, meaning they'd just found out that he was TV. We had a long chat, but he will probably phone back tomorrow for long-term advice. Luckily, he seemed reasonably together about his situation and was reconciled to spending a night in his mini.
Is that it?
That's it. So we don't know what happened.
He never called back.
I couldn't find an entry later to say that the person who was going to spend the night in his mini had phoned back.
So bless him.
We don't know. Yeah.
Aww.
Yeah. So that's the thing about the logbooks is that because it's like a diary of LGBT plus life in Britain, it's full of these dead ends. And it's just in the moment this is happening. I mean, if you look back at your diary, your teenage diary now, I don't recommend it.
Just be lots of whining about how come no one fancies me. I think.
And there'll be a million dead ends. You know, you'll say like, you know, oh my God, I just saw Stuart Robinson in his dressing gown. And then you'll think like, who was Stuart Robinson? Did I ever get to know him? Like, did he ever answer my Valentine's that I put in the Scouts post at school or whatever?
Oh, Uncle Stuart.
And so it's, you know, this is the thing about history. We kind of, I think it's something that we don't always remember that when we're in the present moment, when we're looking back at history, we're doing that through the lens of like a history book, which has a final page and a back cover and it's closed. And that's a moment that we've read about.
And people have thought about
it. And
summed it up.
Structured it together.
Yeah.
Or we're listening to the Logbooks podcast.
And which you can find on all your good podcasting apps.
Which is 10 episodes. And we think, great, 1974 to 1982, a history of LGBT life in Britain in 10 episodes. Ding, it's done. But the reality is a lot more messy than that. Kind of a really interesting thing on working on this project is physically looking through all these notebooks, basically with handwritten notes, with all these dead ends like that, these loose threads of the tapestry. And obviously I'm trying to structure them and put them together and to tell a coherent story, which is what the podcast is. But then the reality is a lot messier than that. And we just don't know what happened to this person who spent the night in a mini.
Oh, but like if you were 19 in 1982 and spent the night in a mini because your parents kicked you out, get in touch. I want to know what happened. We can't know. So let's imagine that his parents rethought their actions the next day in the cold light of day and realized that they loved their son no matter what and
let's
go from there.
Hope for that. Yeah. I just don't know.
No. Oh, that would drive me up the wall. Mm. I would find that so frustrating.
Obviously, it's one of the things that Switchboard volunteers are very, very heavily trained in is that thing of like just not knowing anything. I mean, another kind of, well, like depressingly common call is a suicide call. Someone saying that they're so low and struggling so much that they want to take their life. And sometimes you don't know whether if you're a volunteer who's taking that call and you obviously talk to them and handle that situation. But then when they hang up, you don't know, you know, what they're going to do, whether you've had a positive impact on them or not. So that's kind of the most extreme end. A lot of the calls are, yeah, just like, where can I go to get bummed in a park? And so you maybe might give them that advice, but you never know whether they were successful or just got some grass stains on their knees.
Oh, that'd be great. Hi, I rang up yesterday to ask you getting bummed in a park, and it was great. Thanks. Yeah,
thanks,
that was really
ding,
good. Yeah.
Ding.
So would you? So if I rang up and said, hello, I want to get done up against a tree, you'd tell me.
Well, I mean, if you rang me and told you and asked me... Like,
so, Adam, if I want to get bummed up against a tree...
I can tell you some places. Obviously, in the late 70s and the early 80s, which is the period that we looked at in the logbooks, that is a dangerous action because, number one, the police are after you.
Yeah, because they were really quite almost hunting people at that point.
Yeah, they really were. It was after the partial decriminalisation of gay sex in 1967, but in many ways that... like further emboldened the police to use the laws that they could do, such as gross indecency or soliciting, which were offences that were commonly used to charge men for having sex with men, especially in public places like toilets or up against a tree in a park. And so, yeah, so it was a dangerous thing to do because of that. But also you're in a kind of vulnerable position when you're doing that. And so, you know, you could get mugged. People got mugged in parks doing that kind of thing. So that was a kind of debate among switchboard volunteers in that time period and after that time period about, well, should we advise callers what to do? Because they're going to put themselves in danger with the information that we give them. On the other hand, this is the 70s and this is the era of gay liberation. And the Gay Liberation Front.
Another historical thing to go look up by yourself, kids. Thing,
yeah. Formed in the UK in kind of 70, 71 after Stonewall in the US when the Gay Liberation Front started then and did some really quite radical actions, amazing stuff. And their aim was like full liberation for what they would have then said gays and lesbians, you know, didn't have the LGBT plus thing then. And so there was that movement to say, well, look, if someone wants to go get bummed in a park, then they have that right. That's their body, their choice, their freedom. And as switchboard, we should be at the front line of giving them that information. And that is a debate that's happening in the logbooks between volunteers.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I can give you a sort of another
place to go get bummed.
Place to go get bummed. Or another logbook entry, which I could read out for you.
Sure.
Which is kind of similar. And it kind of highlights the debate quite well and the sort of that tension in the air among certainly men seeking sex with men at that time.
Right. Yeah. Hit me with it.
This is a logbook entry from February 13th, 1976. The cottage on the third floor of the department store, which I'm not going to name, in Oxford Street is very dangerous at the moment. Staff or plainclothes police watching everyone and looking under cubicle doors. And obviously, for some of our listeners, they might need to know what cottage means.
Yes, cottaging. I'm told, I've heard it from several reputable sources when they didn't have their mouth full, that cottaging is essentially places where one can go and have sex inside, but not in private, as it were. So like toilets and things like that. Mostly public toilets.
Yeah.
So there was, in 1970-something, a department store on Oxford Street, which may or may not still be there, we don't know, that had toilets on the third floor that were at the time a hotspot.
Exactly.
For a quick fiddle while you have a wee. Only then they were looking under cubicle. That's a horrible invasion of privacy.
Yeah.
Even, like, imagine you just sat there, like, reading the paper or whatever, just doing your business. And then someone sticks their head over the door.
Yeah.
Wow.
The police would go further, actually, and in their efforts to capture men having sex with men in Lewes, they would often find their most handsomest police officer and put him in regular clothes, especially shorts, and make
some
him stand
little denim number,
some little denims, yeah, exactly, and make him stand in the loo, and then if some horny little bugger came in, like eyed him up, then that's all that they would need to swoop and say, "You're nicked, son."
See, I'm almost certain that that's entrapment. That is definitely illegal.
It is entrapment. But it was very, very common. And so those police officers were called pretty police. And
not just bastards.
Not just bastards, yeah.
That's. I mean, those poor people, like, ringing switchboard and switchboard saying, "Hey, go here, don't go there." And, you know, you have to trust them. And then, like, but surely then also, could not the police also do the same thing? Because you wouldn't go, "Hello, I'm a policeman." You go, "Hello, I want to get bummed somewhere by a stranger."
Yeah.
And then whatever the switchboard told you, you could round up three or four of your bobby mates and just wait with your truncheons out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, at the time, I wouldn't put that past the police. I mean, it was years and years and years that this was going on, even up into the 90s, the entrapment stuff. But let me ask you a question, Scott, because I've read these entries and it's a very, very common way for men to have sex at this time that we're looking at, the 70s and the 80s. It's, you know, people still do that today, even in Britain, but certainly in other countries, people still meet in public toilets and stuff. And that's a lot of the time because those individuals feel like that's the only way that they can get sex. Maybe they have a partner at home who's the opposite sex, for example, so they can't use their home. So they go to the toilet where they know that people are cruising for sex, and that's what they do. Sometimes, obviously, for some people, like the act of doing it in semi-public or the act of doing it in a toilet with vaporized urine in the air is also like horny for them.
It's quite romantic, you know,
yeah,
the smell of like bleach and the splash of liquid.
Lovely.
And just,
I read those entries about, like, you know, the stories of people who were doing that because that was how they could have sex. And I think, wow, I live in a time where it's much more comfortable to be gay. It's still got a long way to go, even in Britain, etc. People still attacked and all of that. But it just makes me wonder, would I have done that? If my circumstances and the time that I was living in meant that the only way that I could have the sex that I wanted was to take that risk of being arrested or being attacked or anything like that and go to a public toilet. That's the something that I think about when I think about this moment in history. And so I would ask that question to you, like, how do you feel about that?
I imagine I would, just because it was that or nothing, essentially.
Yeah.
And that's,
did you take
sad
that risk?
Yeah, that's awful to think that that was the only way. And I suppose for some people, especially like you say, the closeted ones who have like family, or that'd be the only contact they have with like their gay side, it would be the only part of it that they could acknowledge, and even then only occasionally, and at great risk of like having their entire life ruined.
Yeah. So it's just one of those things in history, which is not long ago. Like, our parents lived in this time as adults. It's really not long ago. I mean, this is the reality. Reading these logbook entries now from the 1970s in Britain could be text messages from 2020 in some parts of the world now.
Makes you think.
It makes you think.
It does.
Yeah.
Things nowadays are a bit miserable if you look at them like that, but there's also a lot to be grateful for.
Yeah.
I could sit and listen to you all day. I mean, I can, because there's already a podcast out there with all of this on
exactly,
it, isn't there?
Yeah.
Do you have another example for me?
I do. I have one more example, which is about the politics of the time. Kind of gives you an example of just how political and politicized it was just to be having sex or finding a partner or just hanging out with other gay people. Quite often, you know, you might be wearing a badge which identifies you as gay. You know, it might say gay rights, gay liberation, or something like that.
Even now, I have a red AIDS ribbon.
Right, you have a red AIDS ribbon.
On my black coat.
Can you imagine being chucked out of a pub for wearing that now? Here's a logbook entry from August 23rd, 1975. Leeds CHE, that's Campaign for Homosexual Equality.
In Leeds?
In Leeds.
Right.
Like the local Leeds chapter.
Right.
And the Gay Liberation Front. So those were like the two activist organisations at the time. Leeds CHE and GLF are asking gays to boycott the New Penny as management are refusing admittance to women wearing trousers.
Ooh, hang on. We're going to have to unpack that. The New Penny is presumably a pub.
Pub.
Not like a newly issued coin,
yes,
which is where my brain went to start with. All right. So there's a pub called the New Penny,
yes,
that is turning away women,
yes,
for wearing trousers.
Because that was a symbol of them being lesbians. And then the entry continues, York lesbian group looking for new meeting place as the landlord has become oppressive. He is refusing to serve people wearing gay badges. So these are symbols of like your sexual identity and your freedom to wear a message or wear trousers if you're a woman. And
so
you're
being kicked out of a pub.
1975.
Yeah. A woman wearing trousers could have been kicked out of a pub.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah. So this history is like really quite recent. Yeah.
Not, I was about to say that's 25 years ago, but it's not, is it?
It's not 45.
I'm very bad at maths today and generally, but that's crazy. So the Leeds chapter of...
The Leeds chapter of the two... well, the Leeds chapter of the Campaign for Homosexual Equality and of the Gay Liberation Front, those are the two activist organisations, are asking gays to boycott the pub, the New Penny, because the management are kicking women out with trousers.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And then in York, if you wore a badge that just could identify you as a gay person,
yeah,
or even as an ally, although I suppose this is why allyship is still a bit iffy, isn't it? Because wow.
So that, like, common badges at the time, like slogans on badges, were things like "Lesbians Ignite." That was a badge that I've seen. Also, the Bishopsgate Institute has a collection of badges. Yeah, so if you want to look at like gay politics, shit, badges, shit, then the Bishopsgate Institute in London has a pretty decent collection of all of these badges.
Is it open to the public?
It is.
Wow. And yes. Do they have them? Do you have to kind of like go and say, hello, I need to see this. It's in cabinet 4B or whatever.
Yes, that's exactly what you need to do. You need to fill out a little slip of paper, like say who you are. But most of the collection is just available and open. You just have to go and present yourself. And you can search the catalogue online on the Bishop's Institute website.
You can make sure they've got something that you want to see.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. So that's, this history is, you know, like still living with us and often preserved in archives, but it is something, LGBT plus history generally is something that has not traditionally been preserved and not held. There's a couple of archives in the UK, the Bishopsgate Institute is one of them, and in other parts of the world obviously they have them, but it's not something that has like really been kept. And obviously it's only really in the past decade or so, a couple of decades, where people have like written about LGBT history and researched it more thoroughly, that kind of thing.
There was that thing maybe last year or the year before where two skeletons were unearthed holding hands.
Oh, yeah.
And they were like, oh, it's a warrior and his wife. They were lovers. They've been buried together in a really romantic gesture. And then it turned out they were both men.
Yeah. And then it was like, oh, they're really good friends. Or they're colleagues.
It's like, oh, they must have been brothers or something. Yeah.
When I read these logbook entries and obviously making the podcast, the thing that I always try to remember about these moments from history is thinking about those women who were wearing trousers and going to a pub in Leeds and getting kicked out. And they probably knew that wearing trousers was maybe risky business, or that certainly the women wearing a badge that says Lesbians Ignite or like Gay Liberation Now, things like that. And just thinking these were individuals who made those choices, knowing that people were being arrested in public toilets for cruising for sex, knowing that when they marched on political marches through central London or some of the other big cities, that the police were there to basically kettle them, and that people whose days were interrupted by this march walking through the high street, those people would like spit on them and call them names. But these were individuals who were making those choices to be out and proud and to walk down the street or to walk into a pub wearing trousers or a badge. And those individuals are paving the way for you and me to sit here and make this podcast, which anyone in the world can listen to, know our voices, know our names, look us up, because we are fucking unashamed gays, out and proud. And it's thanks to those people who were doing that in a riskier way before us.
It's amazing how much of it, I mean, I say, oh, it's amazing how much we take for granted. You don't know you're born. But it is, isn't it?
It is. It really is.
It's crazy.
I mean, I don't want to be the person who like stands outside GAY and says to all of the 18-year-olds as they're going in, like, never forget where your gay forefathers, you know, like led you here. I mean, I guess that's what I'm kind of doing now. But like, you know, we should live our lives. Those 18-year-olds should just be able, should just wander into GAY and just
buy me a drink.
Buy Scott a drink at the end of the bar, and, you know, should have that freedom. But I also think we all owe it also to ourselves every so often to just take a moment and remember. And that's what LGBT History Month, I guess, is all about in February. It's just a moment, a collective moment to think, wow, there is a history to this. We are part of a lineage and we are inheriting our freedom from those people who were out before us.
From all those brave people who did the hard work so we don't have to.
Yeah.
Very thoughtful way to end it, which is nice.
Yes, lovely.
Thank you very much, Adam, for coming along and doing this special Gay History Month episode.
Thank you for having me. It's been really nice to actually like have lots of space to talk it all through outside the strict structure that I placed on the podcast, the Logbooks podcast.
The podcast that you created.
That
you put on yourself.
Yes, exactly. Well, there's three of us producers, Shivani Dave and Tash Walker. And
who are both lovely.
And that, yes.
So you can find the Logbooks wherever you find Probably True. Just search the Logbooks, presumably.
Yeah, it's three words, the Logbooks.
I'll be back with your regularly scheduled Probably True new series starting on the first Monday in March. So that's very soon. Until then, tatty bye. Right, let's go find a tree to get bummed under, shall we?
That was Probably True, the repeatedly award-winning storytelling series created by me, Scott Flashart, to remind all of my queer brothers and sisters that we are none of us alone. You can find transcripts of every episode, links and other things at probablytruepodcast.com. There's additional content and other lovely stuff available to subscribers at patreon.com/probablytrue. And if you want to get in touch, just search Probably True Podcast on the socials.
I'm giving away nudes for free. Of me, like my nudes, not just random tarts I found on the internet. If you'd like to see what I look like with no clothes on, all you have to do is go to podcastviews.com, fill out the survey, and then send me a screenshot of the thank you page at the end. That's it. That's all you have to do to see me in the nip. I'm also trusting you not to just post them immediately online and share them with everyone, you know. It's just for you, really. Just go to podcastviews.com. Such fun.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.